Okay, as I say, we're going to shift our focus now from national to state, and we are going to hear from our governmental affairs team. The co-chairs of the committee, Artis Basin and Joshua Saunders, and also our director of governmental affairs, Regina Brink. And mentioned Jeff Tom will be getting the action somewhere. I don't know who wants to start, but you guys take it away. Let's hear about what's happening in the state.
I will. Thank you, Steve. And thank you, first of all, to our wonderful co-chairs, Artis Basin, and she's been doing this for a very long time and doing it well, and Joshua Saunders, and he has stepped up and he and Artis are working together. It's the way I believe mentoring works. We put two people together that can gain it from each other's knowledge and experience. And that is exactly what happened with my assistant director of governmental affairs, Jeff Tom. He's stepping back, but he stayed on to assist me, and he's been great in both roles when he was director and now as assistant director. Thank you all. And of course, thank you to our committee, the people on the governmental affairs committee. We couldn't do it without you. And you'll be hearing from some of them who went to DC. But first, we're going to start with the state. And hopefully, Jeff is on so he can take over in a little bit.
Regina, I don't mean to interrupt you, but Joshua is on the attendee side. Do you need him unmuted?
Yes,
Okay.
Joshua, Artis, and Jeff.
Artis, you
I'm
have on
here.
your
I'm on
side,
the
and Jeff,
panelist
you have
side.
on the
Great.
panelist side. I'll unmute Joshua.
Okay, and we'll need some participants, but they can raise their hand when the time comes and just talk.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, thank you. So AB 1902, as many of you know, has gone into effect as of January 1st, 2025, and that is the prescription labeling, and it covers Braille, large print, and it doesn't have to be ScriptTalk, but similar apps and things to ScriptTalk. They can have their own with their own independent device and all that without getting in the weeds. But that is, it covers all of it. And it covers about it. We worked it together with a bill that covered 15 languages now available on the pharmaceutical website. And that's how we got that in, saying, if you're going to offer it for a lot of languages, let's make Braille, large print, and accessible audio labeling part of that. And I want to extend an opportunity, any chapter that wants one of us to come and talk to you from governmental affairs, either of our chairs or Jeff or myself, to go to your chapter, whichever works scheduling wise. We will be glad to come. It may be virtually, but we would talk to you guys about this bill and how to implement it locally. Because as of now, we don't know if regulations have been written. We know they've been talking about it at the pharmacy level, but since it's in effect, we really need people to use it, request it, and it would be nice for everybody involved. So that's an opportunity that you can get in touch with me. I'm all over CCB, so you probably know how to reach me. And go ahead and let me or one of my team come to talk to you about it. SB 671 is another bill, and it's more of a not as exciting of a bill, but it's to finish getting Caltrans to put the audio pedestrian signals where they own the intersection, basically. And it's finishing a process that we started when we signed on to another bill, and that concerned leading pedestrian intervals. And I've been learning more than I ever did about the difference between those things. And what this would do is just put into law what's already in the code for Caltrans. Once a signal breaks or needs to be repaired, they need to replace it with an audio pedestrian signal. And we're asking them to do that with the latest technology that's touch-free. That means when you come up to the pole, it automatically starts without having to find the button. There's still a button if you want to use it. And it has vibro tactile feedback so that if you need the vibration instead of the speech, that works as well. And it's not the cuckoo kind. It actually has speech that says walk and wait and so forth. So That is that bill, and it's being carried by Sabrina Cervantes, and I believe she's District 22. And coincidentally enough, in District 21, Diana Papan, PAPAN, is carrying AB 1250. And this came in pretty late in the process. Jeff and I thought it wasn't going to happen, but this is the eligibility for paratransit. And what that bill does is says that if you have a disability that isn't reasonably expected to change, then you should be able to certify once, especially since the process is so complicated and you have to go to a doctor and all that. And then once you're certified, you shouldn't have to keep recertifying. We estimate that about 20% of people have what's called a temporary disability or something that might improve. But there's not hard data, but it does suggest that about 80% of disabilities either don't improve or actually get added to as people age. Of course, and some of us are experiencing that. So, for instance, I was totally blind for a long time due to retinoblastoma as a child. And somewhere recently, I don't know, so many years ago, I started to develop stenosis, and it's pretty painful and pretty I've got it under control and I deal with it, and I can actually walk 2 miles now. But it takes work and it takes therapy and stuff. So you can get more disabilities as you go along. So that's our thing there. And that is, it's both of those bills have gone out of committee and they went on consent. And for those of you that know the process, that's really good news. And lastly, I want to deal with the NLS cuts. You'll hear more about this at the resolutions stage, but there are cuts slated on the state level. They're complicated to explain, but I'll just say that the Braille Institute stands to learn lose $500,000, and the Braille and Talking Book Library could be cut up to 90% on the budget that actually, and the complicated part is they'll be able to get books, but it's the part of their programs that would distribute the books out or readers, like to be able to get a hold of the readers and offer those for free, or hotspots for free, or any of those specialized programs. Some of them have already been cut and they'll be cut further. And so we're going to deal with this in several ways. There was a recent development just this morning that a court case resulted in a freezing of like an injunction that freezes everything until the court can figure out what to do. And so we'll keep you abreast, but there will be a script coming out. We would like people to call their local representative, their federal representatives, congressional representatives, and our two senators, and tell them to sign on to a letter that is going around. So watch your email, and pass it along to people that might be interested. The more phone calls, the better. And in this case, phone calls are the quickest because it's a quick turnaround. And so I'm going to encourage people to do that. And I hope I didn't go too quickly through that. We will be offering time for questions at the end of each of these little parts. But I want to give Joshua a chance to speak. Josh is going to talk about the SSI coalition and some of the things going on there. And Josh.
Hi, this is Josh. I wanted to start with a new bill since Regina just went through a bunch of them, AB 246. And what this bill does is it protect helps to protect people with who are using SSI and SSDI from issues if they're financial resources are cut off due to government cuts. We've all been noticing the cuts that have been occurring in the federal government trying to slash different parts of different agencies and stuff. And what this bill states is that if they cannot do an eviction proceeding against you, if you actually don't have access to your SSI or your SSDI due to the fact that those payments have been suspended. And I wanted to let people know that this is a good thing that our state is doing. Currently, it passed through the Senate. That's the latest status on that. But it'd be nice to see this bill completed and passed on to the governor. In terms of the SSI coalition, which some of you may be aware of, they are still trying to work hard to make sure that SSI gets up to above the poverty level, and they're still working on that. And they also have a special circumstances program where they're trying to push forward, so that if there's a device, such as a refrigerator and other things that have to be replaced, there'll be some funding for that as well. And we'll know more once the May revise goes through. Thank you.
Thank you, Josh, for that. And Josh has been faithfully going to the coalition meetings and providing input. And it's important that we have a voice there. And he's been that voice. We have time now for questions. We can take three or four, depending on time. I'm going to ask people to limit your questions or comments to about 2 minutes, and the same for the answers. And either one of us can answer the question, depending on what it concerns. Okay, do we have any hands?
I'll remind folks also, you can email questions to ask@ccbnet.org. ask@ccbnet.org if you have a question you'd rather email in.
The host might be muted.
Go ahead, Patty.
Hello. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Okay, so sorry. okay, Josh, I know that the SSI is a state program, but will there be any provision, does anybody know, on the federal level if we should have cuts in our Social Security, like senior disability, or
I may ask for some assistance from Regina for some of this, but I believe that the bill that's being passed through does not distinguish between whether the funding comes from the federal government or the state, because I know the people who get SSI or Social Security, it comes from both sources.
Okay, thank you.
Right. It's for people that get SSI/SSP, which if you're on regular Social Security, it doesn't address. There's other bills addressing that. But okay, at the moment, it's for the lowest income, because that's the lowest income people that are currently living below the poverty line. So that's
okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Livy, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was wondering about this letter that was mentioned. When approximately will this letter come out?
The script will come out later today, probably this either between now and the bank, the last session of the banquet, or after the banquet, as soon as I can get it done. And it's a script. And what I'd like to have happen is people call on the phone, and this is just a guide, but say something like what is in the script. So it'll come out soon.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we have Edward. Go ahead.
Hi, this question is for Josh. You mentioned the SSI program, making sure that the SSI is above the poverty level. Is this for the state, or is this a federal process you're trying to get it above? Because I've had people, when I was a counselor, move out of state, thinking that the SSI they have here in California would be the same in another state, and they found out it wasn't. And then they had a hard time getting back. So I was wondering, are you talking about the SSI poverty level for the national or for the state? Thank you.
Sure. The organization that I'm the coalition here is a coalition in California. And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to get the California legislature to supplement funding to get the amount raised above the poverty level in the state. It would be nice if there was a federal equivalent that was trying to push that, federally for the rest of the country, but this is where we are.
So if I could, Madam Chair,
go ahead,
maybe add to that a little bit.
Yeah.
California has one of the highest SSI state levels in the country.
SSI.
Now, But that's in part due to the fact that our standard of our cost of living is so high. So, most states have give less in benefits than California does. But the good thing so far, I haven't seen anything that indicates that the federal portion of the SSI grant, which every state uses, including our own, is going to be decreased. I mean, it's always possible, but I haven't seen that yet.
Don't give them any ideas. Okay. Do we have another hand? We can
Yes,
take
we
one.
do. Lori Kastner, go ahead, Lori.
Hi, am I unmuted now?
Yes.
My question is regarding this museum and library funding bill that I think an email was sent this morning about it again. And the federal funding for museums and libraries have been cut, but my understanding was that the Library of Congress, which I guess would include all of our libraries for the blind, is not affected by that. Is that correct?
No, it's not, because there are portions. And so the actual books and the actual production of books is not affected, but will be affected both at the Braille Institute and the Braille and Talking Book Library is the means to distribute those books out, such as staff, such as mailing and getting everything. It's free matter, but it's not all the way free to get it in the mail, right?
I
So
understand.
all of the things to distribute the books and to provide devices to read on, like your machines, not the machines themselves, but to get them to you. So if there's no way to distribute books to people and to buy new cartridges and all that kind of things, then it doesn't matter whether we have all the books. So that's the rub. And when they put out the press releases and the talking points, they try to concentrate on they're not cutting our books. That's true, but they might just sit in the warehouse unless you can download them.
Bard won't be impacted by that.
Correct, because it's a pretty it'll be up there and you can download. You can do download to your Victor Stream, all that stuff. But the majority of people, and this is from Mike Marlin, I don't know what the Braille Institute's figures are, but up here in Northern California, he told us that 80% or so, right, Jeff, actually still use the cartridges because people are newly blind. They're in nursing homes. They're just losing their sight. A lot of people are 55 and older and don't even touch a computer. My mother never touched a computer till the day she passed.
Thank you. I understand. I appreciate your answer.
Okay, do we have a question by email, Steve?
Rob is checking that, so
In the meantime, you have one more hand.
Let's hold on and see if we have
Sure
anything
thing.
by email. Thank you.
Sure.
No email so far.
Okay, let's take that hand, and that'll be the last one.
Okay, Shauna, go ahead, Shauna.
Shayna?
Shayna?
Hi, my question is about so I understand that the state librarian is the one who instituted these cuts both to the Braille Institute Library and the Braille Talking Book Library. Is he above Mike Marlin? How does that work? Is he
So
Go ahead and take that, Jeff.
I'm not 100% sure this is accurate because it's very confusing. But what I think is happening is that the state is going to cut the grant that it gives to Braille Institute. But the reason I believe they're cutting that grant is that the federal money through the Institute for Museum and Library Services is going to be cut. And so and that money goes directly to the state. If the state bore the whole the entire cut in that funding source, then then it would be then the Braille and talking then the Braille Institute library wouldn't undergo any cuts, and the state would take a huge cut. So this way, the cut is actually going to be split over both libraries. Now, that doesn't do either library any good, but I think that's probably what is happening. The Braille Institute says it doesn't get any federal funds, but in a way, in a sense, it's allowed to get the funding it does because of the federal money that comes through the Institute for Museum and Library Services. That's my best understanding of this anyway.
And
Thank you.
we're still researching, and we'll keep you updated if we get corrections or more current information. Sorry, that's my Braille sense deciding to turn off and turn back on. So I would like to move on now and let Jeff take over because we want to talk about the DC Leadership Conference and our federal efforts on behalf of our state, just to confuse you guys more.
Okay, so I am going to. What we want to do is hear from those who went to the DC Leadership Conference. Not going to necessarily spend a ton of time on the specific legislative imperatives as much as we do want to hear from those who went there. And so, first, if, and I think they're all on the
You have Linda, who has
attendee
her hand
side. So,
raised already.
yes, can we
Okay.
recognize Linda first? Linda
Absolutely.
McLeod.
We were going to go with artists first, Jeff.
Oh, okay, I am
Okay.
sorry about that. Artists, will you speak first, and then Linda will can if will be recognized after artist finishes.
Okay, well, I understood that I was supposed to briefly
You
go over some federal
I had
legislation.
forgotten. Entirely my fault.
No problem. No problem. First of all, I want to remind everyone that federal advocacy, state advocacy, whatever, it's not a one-time thing. So you can't just make one call and think it's taken care of because it's ongoing. And CCB this year, we took a targeted approach to national legislation because we felt that there aren't very many people in California Council of the Blind that could afford to go to the DC leadership and the legislative conference. So we decided that we were going to have ask CCB members to participate in advocacy either in their local district offices or come to national and talk to the DC legislators in DC. And that way we got far more participation in the whole process. We also asked CCB members, as we have in the past, to give their name onto letters. So for those of us going to DC, we'd have a better opportunity to see the legislators in districts that we were not constituents in. So ACB did have three imperatives, which we all obviously took to the various offices. And all of those, of course, are very important. The medical device accessibility, the website and application accessibility, and the communication and video and technology accessibility, which first passed in 2010, but now it's up for reauthorization again because there's been so many technology changes in the few years since then. And we advocated about those, but there also are a lot of other national issues that individual members talked about. For example, we're all concerned about the Department of Education going away as a department and what will happen to the programs under that. Because there's a lot of special education programs that are under that. Randolph Shepherd is under that. And we're not sure what's going to happen to those programs. So we were advocating on that. Also, there's a few other bills that have come up recently. There is an SSI one in relation to the amount of assets you can have. And there's a bill
that's been brought forward to increase those. Right now, people can only have, as individuals, $2,000 of assets, and as a married couple, $3,000. They're asking this to be increased to $10,000 for individuals and $20,000 for married couples. So that's one of the new bills that's being introduced. There's obviously some things that are, they're talking about cutting different programs, disability and aging programs. And one of the ones they're looking at cutting is the protection and advocacy, where, you know, people get help if they can't get the programs they're supposed to get. There's consults on developmental disabilities, and there's long-term care. Those, there's proposing cuts to all of those. There's the bill about Safeguard American Voting Eligibility Act, and called the SAVE Act. Now, this isn't just for blind people. This is for people across the board, but it would affect our community a lot, because they want people to bring in their birth certificate or a passport to register to vote. And many people with disabilities do not have immediate access to both, and it would take some doing for people to get a hold of this kind of paperwork. Another one that's come up is the Connect for Health Act, which would help people to connect online for medical visits more easily. There's an early detection of vision impairment for children act. There's reauthorization of the Older Americans Act, which has to be reauthorized this year, and that's waiting to be introduced. And I'm sure some of you have heard about that before, and that's very important, because a lot of people in the blindness community are in the Older American group. Raise the Wage Act is waiting to be introduced. There's Cogswell's Macy Act is waiting to be introduced. So as you see, there's lots and lots of them. One of the big changes they're making in Social Security Administration and the IRS is that they want to make it impossible to get paper checks any longer. So if you currently now get your Social Security in a paper check, that program is going to be discontinued by September. So each person has to contact their local office and make sure they get the information so that it can be put immediately either on a debit card or in your bank account. And this is going to take some time, because they've cut staff in Social Security offices by about half. And so you'll have to be able to either access your account online. You can do it online if you have a My Social Security account, and you can sign up for one of those online. And as long as you could provide information so that they know who you are, you can do it all online, or you'll have to call your local security office and perhaps go in person, depending on where you live, to be able to make sure that you get that changed so that you get your checks right into your bank account.
And try to make an appointment, because if you don't, they might turn you away.
That's right. You don't want to just walk in the office, because with less offices now, you might be waiting all day. And so it's much better if you can ask for an appointment in advance. Thanks, Regina.
Yeah.
It's already been touched on that there's been some efforts. Florida, Tennessee, and a couple of other states about getting rid of the Rendell-Shepard Act. Now, they're not sure what's going to happen when the Department of Education, if they vote to close that, because then if it remains, it would have to go under a different departments, such as the Department of Labor. Of course, you've heard some about the HHS cuts, Health and Human Resources, which affects housing and a bunch of other programs, which would relate to anyone that's waiting for housing. And they're really talking about substantial cuts there. I've heard up to 50%. There's also in the current budget, there's a lot of cuts to Medicaid and SNAP programs. And one of the things I just read about, I don't know if it was last night or this morning, they're adding a provision there with new work requirements. Well, as you know, many people with disabilities are not able to work because they have conditions that make it very difficult for them to work. So this could really affect some blind people, especially those who have more than one condition.
Or can't find work. Sometimes it's harder.
Right, right. Well, transportation is a big issue. And of course, in federal jobs specifically, they're really pushing people to go back in person. So it's going to really affect a lot of people. Okay, so that's my legislation kind of update. And at the end, we're going to, of course, take questions. So,
all right. Thank you, Artis, for that very informative report. Excellent.
And I'm sorry, Jeff, my Pro Display jumped and I called on you too soon. But now, go ahead.
Okay. So now we want to hear first from Linda, and then let's go to Ed and Christy after that. So you guys be prepared.
Okay. Can you guys hear me?
We can. Yes. Thank you.
All right. Hello. This is Linda McLeod. I am a retired attorney, and I went to the leadership conference this year. It was my first year doing it. I actually was prompted by my daughter, who is a an attorney who works for DREDF, which is a nonprofit and that has headquarters in Berkeley that works on disability issues, to use my abilities, as well as the fact that I do have some means, to go to Washington, D.C. and advocate for disabled people. So it was my first trip. I met Ed and Christy and Jeff, who were fantastic. It was wonderful to learn from them, also to learn from the leadership conference. I would encourage any person who can afford to fly to D.C. and spend a few days there to do this. It's a wonderful learning opportunity to give you all the information you need to be able to be armed with the facts and details. And you're given pretty good free rein to take the approach that you feel comfortable with. I spoke with a staff member of my representative, Sam Licardo, and based on my research of Sam, who is a brand new, just voted in representative of my district, I focused on the medical device initiative because it had the most bipartisan support last year. And he had mentioned several times in town halls how important bipartisanship was and that he was trying to create relationships. And so his staff member was extremely interested. I brought my volunteer in with me to the meeting to get her perception on how things went. And she thought things went very, very well. And so did I. He was the only person I actually got to meet of the people in my area. I did drop off materials at the other areas. We had a Zoom call follow-up with Zoe Lofgren, which is a district right next to me. She actually attended the Zoom call, and Christy and Ed and Jeff also joined. And I was never able to connect with another representative, Kevin Mullen. but did drop off materials and made sure that the receptionist knew after 5 minutes exactly what was in my packet. So overall, I just want to basically talk about the experience that I had. It was my first experience. I would definitely go next year, and I would encourage other people to go as well.
Okay. Thank you, Linda. Ed or Christy, which one of you wants to?
I'm going to go first.
Okay.
This is Ed. If anybody went to the Sacramento Legislative Days, fantastic. But I'll tell you, going to Washington, D.C. is like 10 times bigger than Sacramento offices. It's a city down there. And we were met by Claire, who was wonderful, as well as Kobe. And it was a fantastic experience. We had a person by the name of Daniela, who was from Columbia, a student in the area. And she was just super, super nice. And I'm going to tell you, even the staff, when we asked about rooms, a lot of them didn't know the exact rooms. That's how big it was. But anyhow, we met quite a few people. We were there the whole day, and we did not have a time to basically just take a break because we were going from office to office, either dropping something off or talking to the legislatures. But the two people that struck me was Mark Takano. And he was our son's high school teacher. He kind of reminded us. But anyhow, the thing is that when we left the office, we went down to ask about going to Adam Schiff's office, which is in the other building. And the person at the registration desk said, you know, go back to your senator and you could take the tram from one end to the other. And so we went back and the Mark's assembly assistant helped us, and we did take the tram. It was really fantastic. It's not open to the public. You have to have an aide or a representative be with you. When we finished meeting, just dropping off things with Adam Schiff, we walked back to the tram, and they stopped us immediately and said, who are you and what are you doing? We said, well, we came here by tram. They said, good luck. You're not going to get on without a representative. So we had to go outside. But that was great. The other person that we talked to was Ken Calvert. Now, the Democrats were very open, to our initiatives and were very receptive. The Republicans weren't. And so we talked to Ken Calvert's assistant or aide, and he took us into a nice big long room, which was nice. But I could sense that he was like, okay, let's hurry up and get this over with. And he just was looking at papers and not really paying attention to us. We did talk about the description, audio description. And what caught him was when I brought up having him go to the movie theater and do the audio description activity. And he was really, really interested in that. And actually, he put the paperwork down and started, you know, interacting with us. And then he kind of clicked in and says, oh yeah, maybe that is kind of a good initiative for us to look at. Anyhow, those are my experiences. I want to thank the team that put this together. It was a great experience. And if you can go, do it. Go ahead, Christy.
Hi. So my experience, it was very wonderful. I enjoyed the workshops that we had in the seminar, and we had a very good preparation day on Monday for the legislative seminar. And what I was happy with is the first person we met with, we talked to Jimmy Gomez, who went to high school with our son. So our son had his name was dropped throughout the day. I knew Jimmy. I didn't know him, but in a union convention, he came up to me and introduced himself and said that he went to school with our son. And of course our son, you know, said, yeah, he did. We went to school together. So he was, his legislative aide was very up on all of our legislation plus more. So that was very exciting. We met with Pete Aguilar's assistant, and he's our congressperson. I'm sorry, I said assembly, but it's Congress. We met with that aide, and that was very good. Yeah, we were walked our shoes off, and when we dropped off all of the other paperwork, we went to, I can't remember whose office it was, but that person said that they were the disability coordinator. So we actually got to drop off paperwork to that person. So again, this was so exciting. My adrenaline was so high at the end of the day, because it was just so thrilling to be able to do something like this, to do it as a team, not to have to depend on, oh my gosh, I don't know where I'm going. But to have the assistance of Daniela, who was a very vibrant Colombian student. So again, I can't say enough that experience this once and you'll be hooked. Thank you.
One more thing is that it's really important not to be afraid of talking to your legislator or the aides. The important thing is to tell your story.
Mm-hmm.
And as a vocational rehab counselor for 32 years, I brought up several of my clients and their struggles. And that's how they connect, when you have stories to tell. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, too. And it was great working with all three of you.
Yeah, and thank you, Ed, because that's true. Whether you go to your state, local, city council, wherever you go to advocate. Thank you.
So, does Kevin want to chime in here? I'm sure Kevin has a different perspective than any of us.
Well,
I don't know whether he wants to share it or not.
Well, I can sure try.
Great.
This is the third time I've been, second since I retired. And I would say it took me one or two to kind of settle in. And I was a history major, so I loved walking around the Capitol. And talking to our congressman, our local congressman is the other party, not the one I am. So I enjoyed engaging with his very nice and very smart aide. I just thought he was misled on a few topics, but I would recommend this to anyone to do. I don't know how much I would have got involved. I guess marrying artists brought that into, I don't know what I've listened to everybody talk. I can't really add much except to come in and state your positions, talk to them and just keep advocating. Sorry, that's a little disjointed, but short notice.
No, it's perfect.
Thank you. So,
did Artis have anything you wanted to
Yeah,
add?
No, I'm just about to recognize her. Go ahead, Artis.
I really agree with Ed when he said that it's important to tell your story, because I noticed I've been going for many years, ever since 89 was the first time I went. And each year when I talk to staff members, they really perk up when you tell your story. And that's when they'll ask questions. I've also noticed that if you use a device to like read your Braille, like I always bring my Braille Sense with me, and if I'm reading my notes or whatever, oftentimes they'll ask, what is that device? And that kind of perks them up a little bit too. So they're really interested in hearing how it affects you and others that you meet on a daily basis. So that's the important thing I really want to stress to everyone. But I agree. Go if you've never been before. And there's plenty of us that are willing to assist you in knowing what you need to know, helping you to write letters, helping you to... we even do a session before each year's legislative seminar where we give people a role and act it out, so that they feel more comfortable when they do go to DC. So never feel like you're alone. And as Christy and Ed did, they asked for a volunteer to take them around. And ACB is really good at finding a few of those.
Okay, thank you, Artis. So I know we're running short on time, so I'll just make a couple comments. First, it was great working with the team this year, as it is every year, and I especially like it when we have new members come for their first time, new or old members. Just a couple things I noted. First, on an unfortunate side, we had an appointment set with Senator Padilla's aides, but then it turned out they weren't going to be in D.C. that day. So we're still trying to get that appointment firmed up, but it will happen. I think we haven't had as much success with shifts people for whatever reason. And that's sort of disconcerting because usually, you know, talking to artists and others, Schiff has been someone who's been very supportive and reasonably accessible. So I wanted to make one comment about one of the, and I've actually put this out on the list for those who happen to read it. I had an appointment with one of the three Republicans that is being targeted because they're in swing districts. And this particular one is David Valadao, who's in Bakersfield. And they have the highest rate of, percentage-wise, Medi-Cal recipients in the state. They are scared. There is no question that the 2026 elections are squarely on their mind. They are putting some pressure on the leadership when it comes to reducing Medicaid cuts, but they're between the veritable rock and a hard place because they don't want to, you know, anger their president, but they also don't want to anger their constituents. So the more pressure that, in my mind, the more pressure that gets placed against these folks in swing districts, Ken Calvert, Young Kim in Orange County, and David Valadao, the more they are likely to obey the first law of politics that I ever learned, and that is win the next election. It's self-preservation. And so there are possibilities out there of changing Republican votes over the next 2 years, but there's going to have to be pressure on them to vote with their constituents as opposed to the leadership that they are, you know, also sworn to follow. So I want to make that comment, and I want to thank everyone for listening, and Regina for the great job that she did. And that's it from me. Thank you.
Thank you. So if you are in Ken Calvert, Young Kim, and David Valadao's district, please, and I've been told that's how he says Valadao. Okay. If you definitely know how to say your legislator's name. And if it's a complicated one, try to find out before you go how to actually pronounce the name.
I'm glad he's not my legislator then.
Yeah. but we had some letters distributed you could use about the massive cuts that they're still pushing on the CalFresh or SNAP for the federal level and Medicaid or Medi-Cal for us. So we will, I can send that back out to you or any one of us can. And if you need help modifying that to make it more current, that's fine. But you can use the same templates and just update, you know, what you're trying to say. Like, I'm writing to you again about this because it's still happening. Something like that.
Can I make a comment? This is Linda. Regarding the library funding and the state proposing to zero out the Braille and Talking Book Library $500,000 funding, I have called the governor's office and I've actual real person does answer. And I encouraged all the people in my family to also call, and they were also able to get through. And I just basically said, I don't understand why this is being cut. I'm blind. I need these services. They're very important to me. It doesn't have to be complicated. You really don't need too much of a script. They were very receptive and said they would forward on the message to the governor. So it was very easy to do. I'm sure Regina, I'm sure the phone numbers of the governors can be distributed, but It's not super complicated. And I would call several times a week if you can.
Yeah, and the script that I send out is just a guide. Make it your own, make it personal. But some people would like to kind of see what they'd like to say. But you're right, you don't need it. And phone numbers will be provided when this goes out.
Regina, do you want to take any hands from the audience?
Yes, please. But first, do we have any email questions, Rob? You might be muted, Rob. Okay, let's take a hand, or maybe Rob can email and tell us.
Sheila, go ahead.
I'm concerned about, aging and disability resource connections, or ADRCs, which are connected to the Administration for Community Living, which is being gutted. These ACL programs are often serviced by independent living centers, some of which have, and one of ours in Alameda County has, some blindness services that they have attached to them. So I would also like to put that on your scope. And in addition, I sent out a Medi-Cal story. There are at least three places that are asking for Medi-Cal stories, and I wrote one. And mine was more unusual in that everybody else was saying, you know, oh, we need our IHSS, we need that, we need this. And I did say that too. But what I said is, I'm working, and I'm able to work because I have Medi-Cal that helps take care of some stuff so I don't have to stress over every little thing. But I also brought up the fact that some stuff in Medi-Cal needs to be improved. And I just want to point out, for anyone who has any doubt at all, the SSI portal is a piece of, and it is very badly inaccessible for use with screen readers. And that is well known. Yeah, and so I would like to see some pretty serious hard kicks in the cojones to some higher ups in the administration of the Social Security, because I'm still supposed to report every month, even though I'm not receiving any funding,
right?
And to prove that I should be on the 250 working disabled program, and I need a whip, and I'm working on it. That's a work incentives planner. I don't mean a whip. I mean a whip.
I'm sorry, Lisa. Are you meaning on the federal or on the state level for SSI?
Well, I was SSI and SSDI. I receive neither now, but I am on the 250 working disabled program, which is part of Medi-Cal.
Let's talk offline about this if it's
well, just yeah. Really quick.
Sorry. I really would love to get into this, but we want to give everyone a chance, and we're doing like a 2-minute sort of.
All I was going to say is it's state and federal, and it's complicated.
I knew that. That's why I was like, ooh, this could take a long time.
Yeah, let's talk offline.
Okay, so I do want to tell you, Sheila, that this is exactly the kind of thing that SSI Coalition is working on. We have members like the Justice in Aging and other groups. And it's the funding you were addressing was exactly some of the funding that artists talked about. All of this is on our radar. And that's why I'm trying to tell people it's a lot. And so a lot of it overlaps. And so that's why I divided the report up too, because it's a lot to handle. Do we have another raised hand? Can we take maybe one more?
We do not right now.
Okay. Did Rob get
No emails so far.
Well,
because you're not.
Wow. I guess we can end here. And I can tell you that we will definitely be sending things out. You might get things from artists occasionally, or Josh, or Jeff, or myself. All of us are a team that are working together to address as many things as possible. What I would also say as a matter of it, these things can be scary. Number one, you're not alone. There's a lot of people facing the same sort of uncertainty that you are. Secondly, you're not without some kind of recourse. And that's what we're here for, to tell you how to contact your representative, to give you resources. And I will tell you, all of the four of us are committed that if we don't know the answer, we'll try to find it out or steer you to someone who can help you. We don't want anyone in this organization or outside of it who is blind or low vision to feel like they're out there all alone with no one and nothing. And that, if we can do anything more as governmental affairs, it's not because we just like to read legislation or we're wonky or we like political science. That's part of it. But for me, and I think for each one of us, it's our commitment to making your lives better in any way that we possibly can through our advocacy. All right. Thank you.
Regina, thank you so much. A lot of good information there, Jeff. Artists, Josh, everybody, and enjoyed hearing the reports of the DC. That's I didn't go this year, but I have gone in the past, and it's an incredible experience. So thank you all. Okay, we're going to shift over to away from government specifically and onto money matters. But first of all, Larry, can we do one more of the chapter of the year entries to find out what our chapters are doing? And keep in mind, we're going to be hearing these throughout the weekend. And then tonight at the banquet, you'll have a chance to vote the people's choice of who will be the chapter of the year. Let's hear one more. Go ahead, Larry.
Okay. I cued it. Hang on.
These are the testimonies from the California Council of the Blind High Desert chapter. Robert Acosta said, "Our chapter is composed of one major bond, and that is love. The problem of one individual becomes our problem to help them, and we do so. If the person is in trouble, we are there to help them." Al Jean Manning said, "We have a very thoughtful president. We do Sailing for the Blind events once a year, and she makes it very accessible and fun for everyone to attend." Nancy Unger said, "Members helped out when my friend passed away. They brought food to my house and socialized with me. It was very nice, a very friendly chapter where we all feel welcome." Lois Tarr said, "Blind people usually want to stay at home where everything is familiar, and it's wonderful that this chapter gives us the ability to get out and mingle with people." Bill Ulmer said, "The chapter includes people from down the hill that find it hard to get transportation, and our club tries to include as many people in the events we hold. We have barbecues and great fellowship with wonderful chapter meetings that are easily accessible through conference calls, with jokes and prayers and a wonderful raffle. Overall, it is one of the best chapters in California Council of the Blind." Jordan Mirander said, "We're so thankful that the Inland Empire chapter was able to merge with the High Desert chapter. All the people are very nice. It is a great chapter." And Adel Galavis said, "I feel welcomed and warm, as well as the discussions are very informative and entertaining. I love the camaraderie that all members share."
All righty. Thank you very much.